Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
Quantum mechanics is over.
It's over, but man, that was a really fun show.
It was
four parts.
Yeah, what a series. And now, Fred, as we mentioned last week in part four, we want to do a show just to catch up on some issues.
Yeah, on some news events. But yeah. You know, one happened just a couple days ago. I was heading out for lunch, and my phone beeped at me, and I think I was at a stoplight, and I checked it.
I hope,
and
hope you weren't driving when you checked it.
Okay, hopefully I wasn't. I'm not going to say. Anyways, it said Denver Bible Church in federal court.
Oh, so
a headline.
Headline.
And so I had to look at it again. I'm like, wait a minute. I know that church. And what happened?
Yeah, we had a victory. So far, it's just the first step. We sued our church, a little Denver Bible Church, and just up north a bit, Pastor Joey Rhodes Community Baptist Church in Brighton. We got together, got two fabulous attorneys, and we sued the federal government and the state government, the governor's office, which has been vacant since the last election, and the State Department of Health, and we've sued them on these orders, these so-called emergency orders that affect churches in such onerous ways. And Fred, this federal judge, we are so thankful.
Yeah, it was a partial victory, right? But it was still a victory.
Oh, yeah. It's a preliminary injunction against the state orders in two areas. And now the state has immediately appealed to the 10th Circuit. I've been interviewed, Channel 4, 7, 9,
Westward, yep.
Telemundo. We had an attorney back in Washington, D.C. contact Bob and you're live here at the studio. Hey, I just saw on the news you guys had a victory. And so this is what the federal judge said. He struck down the governor's orders on having to wear masks during a worship service.
Okay, so no wearing masks.
And the arbitrary limit of 50 people maximum in a church, in a small to medium size church. He also struck that down. So we are so thankful because, Fred, you know, I know it's the whole purpose of Real Science Radio. We are made in God's image and likeness.
Yep.
And we have not only the right that he's given us, but even the obligation to worship him. And when we come together as a church and we want to sing hymns and praise to the Lord, congregational singing without the government interfering.
Yeah, yep.
It's hard enough to speak through a mask. Try singing through a mask.
Oh, man, yeah.
Try getting a church to sing without looking like a bunch of nuts.
You probably want me to sing through a mask, but that's beside the point.
Yeah. Your band members might still want you to
They'd still want me to wear a mask.
So that we were so thankful that this judge recognized that the government does not have a role in church worship in these ways. So the state defendants immediately appealed to the 10th Circuit. And so our attorneys, in fact, we have two. Rebecca Messel, our lead attorney, this week was making oral arguments in the 8th Circuit Court of Appeals on another case.
Okay.
So Rebecca, Brad Bergford, they're pros. And we're so thankful we have them. And in fact, some people are contacting Denver Bible Church and saying, wow, you two churches, you did this. How about the 1,000 other churches?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we welcome.
How did that go? Were you able to get other churches to join you?
I'm pretty sure you tried, right? We did contact a number of churches. You know, pastors are hesitant.
Yeah.
They're not sure the line between challenging a government order versus, you know, Sunday school and communion and all.
You know, my wife's old church was kind of clever. They went down right when this whole thing started, and they got a permit to protest. So they've
so their services are protests.
Yeah.
Hey, that's very creative.
Yep. They even had someone come over and complain and say, hey, we got a permit right here.
That's fun, Fred. So it's a victory, and now we will find out what happens at the 10th Circuit. Our attorneys have entered their appearances, and we plan, with God's help, to continue to defend this victory and to perhaps even attempt to expand it.
Yeah, it's so great. A little Denver Bible Church, you know, and it's flashing on my phone.
Yeah.
So, Bob, what about, have you seen the movie, the Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds? Remember that movie? It's like in the 60s?
Oh, yeah.
That was a classic. Yeah.
Yeah.
So why am I bringing that up? So there's something to do with finches, right? Remember Darwin's finches?
Darwin's finches. So we proposed that they come out with a sequel to The Birds.
Yeah.
And this would be Alfred Hitchcock's film, The Birds, Part 2, Darwin's Finch Nightmare.
Yeah.
Because Charles Darwin. So, Fred, you and I, we've been so busy with the quantum mechanics series. So many things we've wanted to share we haven't had time to get to. So we could do a handful of these updates now. But on our list of not-so-old things, this is the very first list that Real Science Radio ever produced, and it's a classic. It's at rsr.org/list. It's called our List of Not-So-Old Things. And our list has things like opals. They used to say opals form in 100,000 years. Now they know they could form in a few months with microbes. Mm-hmm. Blue eyes originated not 100,000 years ago, but according to Science Daily, a paper in Human Genetics, perhaps 6 to 10,000 years ago, blue eyes.
Yeah.
Blue eyes worldwide originated, and it goes on and on. Dinosaur soft tissue, so many wonderful discoveries showing that the Earth is young. But the newest on the list is Darwin's finches, because the argument has been from his time until now that it would take a long time for evolution to diversify a single species of finch into all the different kinds of finches we find on the Galapagos Islands.
Yeah. And yeah, evolution, they claimed it took 2.3 million years for this diversification to occur.
Right.
So now they do this experiment, and it was a long experiment.
Yes.
It was 17 years.
Yeah, normally an experiment might take 3 minutes or quantum mechanics.
Yeah, so this was
two seconds.
They were real patient with this one.
Yes.
So after 17 years, we have roughly the same diversification as you were supposed to have in 2.3 million years.
Yes.
So, Bob, according to my math, they're off by about 2.3 million years.
I think they are. So here's what they did. Biologists took a single species of finch, and they brought them to a U.S. bird reservation in the Pacific Ocean. And these islands are hundreds of miles away from the nearest land, a few hundred miles away.
Okay.
And they just dropped these finches off, and they didn't go back for 17 years. And when they went back, and we link to the studies, of course, as we always do, rsr.org/list, they found they were in shock. They were stunned, more shocked evolutionists.
Yep.
They found that these finches had diversified in such an extraordinary way. Their beaks, their beak muscles and all, their behavior, filling various ecological niches. They diversified in 17 years the way Darwinists have said that it would take 2.3 million years to see this happen. And Fred, this is exactly a confirmation of the creation model that these changes, they don't have to wait for random mutations.
Yeah.
This is built into the genome.
Yeah, the genetic
of this
diversification
species.
Was already there.
Yes.
You know, you can't have 17 years. The math doesn't work for evolution. They can't say, well, it's fast evolution.
No.
Because they rely on the changes to be random. They require them to be mistakes. in the DNA, plus some blind selection process to move those mistakes over time to, you know, to cause all this diversification. It can't happen. So it totally refutes neo-Darwinism, because neo-Darwinism requires random mutations.
And Fred, what this does is it reinforces another study that was published in the journal Science in 2017 that has also been on our list.
Yep.
And this is that one new species of finch was introduced onto the Galapagos Islands, and within two generations, it filled up ecological niches, which is the way God made organisms to do this, just expressing the genetic variety, diversity that he designed organisms with. And it didn't take a couple million years, as the Darwinists say, for one species to become 14. This one species spawned a reproductively isolated new species in how long? It took two generations.
Yep.
So it totally crushes another icon of evolution.
Did God say to bring it two of every kind of diversified form of an animal?
Onto the ark?
Or did he say to bring two of every kind? I mean,
yes.
You, just think of how much you can get from just two kinds, two of the same kind of animal, how quickly they can, you know,
well, when you look at all the different dog breeds, and you realize that canine, that's a single species. And you go from Great Danes to Chihuahuas. Tremendous diversity, and it's all there in a single species.
Yeah, it's like the North American jackrabbit, I think, was like 17 different species. And they wouldn't interbreed over time because they got geographically isolated. But, you know, you, when they put them back together over time, they kind of figure it out again. So really, it's the same kind of animal. You didn't need to have all those different types of species on the ark. It's kind of a straw man argument that you hear from evolutionists on occasion about how did Noah get all the different species onto the ark.
Right. In fact, you and I did a show a while back about how many mammal species and reptile species would have been on the ark, actually kinds, we should say kinds, because you don't need fish, right?
No. Nope.
But you need birds, mammals, reptiles. You don't need insects.
Nope.
So based on the Genesis definition of the kinds of animals that went on the ark, but you have about 1,000 different kinds of animals, of the clean animals, the ones for sacrifice, not for eating, because God said you could eat all animals when they disembarked, but of the clean animals for sacrificing, bring 7 pair, and of all the others, bring a pair, a male and a female. Fred, some creationists get confused when God created on the first week. They think that, like, how many dolphins did God make? They think God made 2 dolphins, a male and a female. Not at all. The surface waters were teeming with life.
Yes.
Just as the land was teeming with life. Mm-hmm. God didn't make 2 blades of grass.
Yep.
Right? He filled the earth with life.
Yeah, he did make 2 humans.
He made 2 humans. Yep. Yes, a male and a female. And he obviously put plenty of genetic diversity within them.
Yep.
But so between God making Adam and Eve 2 humans and bring onto the ark 2, a male and female of each kind, creationists, many have thought, and it's even found its way into articles that were not well thought out, that God made 2 of each kind. No, not at all.
Yeah. You know, Bob, one of the more exciting or fun things on our list of not so old things is the universe.
We had to put the entire universe on the list. And this was not us. This is mainstream astrophysics. They kept reporting, like 2018, 2019, these findings from the Hubble Space Telescope and from Nobel laureates published in the Astrophysical Journal and other journals, including the journal Science, America's number one science journal. Mm-hmm. They said, you know, we thought the universe was 13.5 billion years old, and we're using all the state-of-the-art information and tools, and we're afraid to say it looks like it's maybe it's 12.5 billion years old. It's like the universe just lost a billion years. And then they said, well, it looks like it's – then another study. It looks like it's maybe 12 billion. Fred, they got to in the journal Science – this is just in the last few years – they think it might be as low as – 11.4 billion years old. Now, that's shaving 2 billion years.
Yeah.
Off.
They have a ways to go, but hey, they're getting there.
They're getting there.
They got another 11.4 to go.
And, you know, they call it precision cosmology. That's a that marketing
so
term.
Yeah.
That has nothing
it
to
is.
Do.
It's
That's not a scientific
term. Yep.
Precision cosmology.
It gives the illusion that they really know what they're doing.
Yeah, they only have to refine.
The science is so precise.
Right. Just refine it to the seventh or eighth significant digit.
Yep.
No, they are groping in the dark when they make these assertions. So we're talking about the universe, the age of the universe, which in so many textbooks and articles said, we're really certain. This is a near mm-hmm. certainty.
Yep.
I mean, that's how confident they were. And it turns
different
out
dating methods all point to the same
yeah,
date.
Right. It turns out it could be wrong by a sixth. That's
yeah.
a big error.
Yep.
Well,
huge.
Things have gotten really wrong now in 2020. Because not only are these other methods of them gauging the age of the universe based on their model, mm-hmm. which is wrong, why would you want a Big Bang-informed estimate of the age of the universe when the Big Bang predictions have been shredded by discovery after discovery?
Yeah, and we've got shows on that. That are awesome.
Just Google Big Bang predictions. Mm-hmm. With God's help, maybe we're still up around number one, two, or three.
Yeah, and one of your best videos, in my opinion, is your Big Bang video.
Well, thank you, Fred.
RSR.org/the store.
That's on that page.
Slash store. Let me say that right.
Okay.
RSR.org/store.
Right.
And you can get the Big Bang video. It's awesome.
Yes. And you could just go to RSR.org/Big Bang predictions.
There you go.
Or yep. Big Bang, or BBP for short.
So, Bob, how about the latest here in 2020 related to the age of the universe?
Oh, yeah.
Something new.
Yeah, this was published just in October.
Are they getting closer?
Fred, well, they're getting closer. Because, you know, of course, their theory is complex and it has its different aspects. How do you estimate the lifespan of a star, the standard evolution of stars and all blue stars, all different kinds of stars?
How do you do this different way of being precise?
Yes, different
okay.
way. Well, it turns out in one of the world's leading journals, Physical Review Letters,
mm-hmm.
in fact, two papers in two sister journals, they found out based on experiment that they have been wrong. Now, they're going to look into this further, but they're confident enough to publish in two journals that astrophysicists have been wrong for decades, more than a half a century, when they say how quickly stars can produce carbon. And the faster stars produce carbon, then their estimates at how old these millions of stars are,
yep.
their estimates are thrown way out of whack. It turns out they now believe that carbon is produced by stellar nucleosynthesis more than a third faster than was near certain for many decades, 34% faster than previously thought. And Fred, you know what they say? I mean, this is the astrophysicist. They say this is like taking a rock to astrophysics. This dramatically
yeah.
affects the standard model on how stars evolve, how astrophysicists measure the age of stars, and how often supernovae should occur. And we make arguments on all these issues, and already the data was very bad for their side.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's really shredded. So, Fred, even though you and I don't record a new list of not-so-old things every year, we do it every maybe 5 years mm-hmm. or so. Folks who are interested could go to that list because we are updating it. We
yeah.
keep it up to date, and it's at rsr.org/list. And that is one of the more fun things we do here
well,
on
absolutely.
This program.
It was the very first list we ever did, right?
Yes.
So, Bob, speaking of lists, we've also updated our list of mammals found in dinosaur layers or lower.
Oh, wow. This is really awesome because, Fred, you know how museums and the evolutionists, they call it the age of the reptiles, right? The dinosaur
yeah. yep.
age. And what they do in museums all over the world, and we know this because it has been documented by Dr. Carl Werner.
Yeah, he's
in his fabulous book and video, Living Fossils.
And we've interviewed him on the show.
Yes, some of our favorite shows. In fact, when Carl came on, we reported the number of mammal species found in dinosaur layers or lower, 432 mammal species.
Yep.
Now, that's a pretty cool number. The museums intentionally leave out mammals when they present mm-hmm. their dinosaur exhibits.
Yep.
And you look and you see, wow, that's a really very unusual looking ecosystem. They could make it way more familiar if they wanted to, like Ken Ham has done with the Creation Museum.
Yeah.
But they intentionally don't.
Yep.
So 432 mammal species. But since then, we have added six more mammal species because they keep finding more and more fossils. And every so often, they come across yet another species of mammals.
Yeah, so we're up to 438. And the latest are bears.
The latest that we have added to the list. And I called Dr. Carl Werner just to make sure he was on board with this.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes we take the scientist work and then we run with it. We extend it. Like dinosaur soft tissue, for example.
Yeah.
So he was thrilled to see this. It turns out that the Smithsonian ran an article a while back of Permian fossils. And this Permian layer, this is from, based on evolutionary time frame, which is always wrong, but it's supposed to be 250 million years before bears were supposed to have evolved. And as clear as day, and we show it on our website, rsr.org/bears, you can see the bear footprints. And Fred, we put next to them modern bear footprints just so people can see and compare. And it is as stunning as could be. And then we quote from the Smithsonian magazine itself, because this world-renowned paleontologist, Jerry McDonald, he does his work in New Mexico. So, Fred, I know you have the quote from, we have the edition right here, the Smithsonian, but maybe you could share some of this with us.
So the science journalist says this. He's got several tracks where creatures appear to be walking on their hind legs, others that look almost simian. On one pair of siltstone tablets, I noticed some unusually large, deep, and scary-looking footprints, each with five arched toe marks like nails. I comment that they look just like bear tracks. Yeah, McDonald says reluctantly, they sure do. Mammals evolved long after the Permian period. Scientists agree, yet these tracks are clearly Permian. So he goes on, the fossil tracks that McDonald has collected include a number of what paleontologists like to call problematica.
Boy, problematica. Yeah. It just like the birds, the sequel.
Yeah.
Darwin's Finch Nightmare, that's problematica too. Well, here's problematica.
So he goes on one trackway, for example, a three-toed creature apparently took a few steps, then disappeared, as though it took off and flew. We don't know of any three-toed animals in the Permian, McDonald points out, and there aren't supposed to be any birds.
Right, because dinosaurs were supposed to have evolved into birds, and here we have bear footprints and bird tracks, by the way. And they're there hundreds of millions of years before they're supposed to be there. But this is just another of thousands of examples where the rocks themselves testify that God's word is true, and the secular record of life on Earth and the secular account of the origin of life and the cosmos is all wrong.
Yeah. And the fossil record itself has kind of a sense of humor. Didn't they find a dinosaur eating a bird?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So how does that happen?
Yeah, dinosaurs ate birds.
Yep. Mammals eat dinosaurs. So you get, you know,
mammals ate dinosaurs. We link to all this at rsr.org/mammals. It's so much fun. In fact, dinosaurs ate rice.
Yep.
They find rice, not in the stomach of, But in the coprolite, is that the polite term? The fossilized dung. They find rice in dinosaur dung, yet their Darwinian model claims that rice evolved millions of years later. So it turns out, actually, titanosaurs ate rice plants, and rice was created when God made plants on day three.
Yeah. Yep.
So we know that rice preceded the dinosaurs, which were made on day six, the land animals, birds, and sea creatures on day five.
So, Bob, I have a theory. Yeah. I wonder, you know, I'm thinking of panspermia. I'm wondering if aliens planted birds around a few dinosaurs so they could eat them and get the DNA. Then they could evolve into a bird.
Ooh.
You know?
Yeah, there we go. Think? There we go. That's it.
I'm sorry I gave some ideas to the evolutionists, but.
Well, Jack Horner, remember him? He's been trying to evolve a chicken.
Yeah, that reminds me, too.
With a tail on it.
Yeah, you actually raised some money to have a dinosaur bone tested for carbon, right?
Carbon-14. We offered it to Jack Horner.
The reason I thought of that was that $34,000 Kickstarter you did to launch a flat earther.
Launch
into
a
space.
Flat earther into space.
That is
now
so
that's
great.
Fun too.
Yeah. Too bad we didn't raise the required amount of like $250,000.
RSR.org/flat.
Yep.
We wanted to purchase the ticket and give it to the world's leading flat earth author and say, go ahead, just take a ride up in space, see what you think. You know, you report whatever you report. But we raised $30,000+, but not enough.
Yep.
Hey, maybe we'll try again. But Fred, you know what else they found? This was in France. They found mammal hairs in early Cretaceous amber, and that amber is supposedly 100 million years old, and that means that these mammals with hair like today's mammal hair, they would have been alive 35 million years before the dinosaurs went extinct.
Wow.
So when you look at it, and we've done our big squeeze, rsr.org/squeeze, where their entire model is being squeezed from every conceivable angle.
Yeah, some of these, Bob, do crossover on our lists. You know, they make a couple of them.
That's a great point.
This next one is awesome, too, because we made a prediction back in 2014.
Oh, yeah.
And we put 2020 as a date of confirmation. You know, we said, hey, this should be confirmed by 2020.
Yeah, now that's a bit gutsy because when you make a science prediction, you know, you could live and die 60 years later. Maybe it hasn't come true. And you say, well, maybe someday it will. Okay, that's valid. But we made a prediction about what they find in outer space. And we said, just to put an end date on it, let's say this prediction will be confirmed by the year 2020. And that year is almost up now, Fred.
It is.
The prediction was that astronomers will find significantly more evidence of biological material in space. Now, why in the world would young Earth creationists say that? Because of the global flood and the fountains of the Great Deep. When the fountains erupted, the debris that resulted when the crust of the Earth cracked around the whole globe, the 40,000-mile-long mid-oceanic ridge, it's the scar left over from when the crust of the Earth cracked and the fountains came up with such force that the debris, much of it reached escape velocity, left Earth's gravity, beat the tar out of the moon, especially the near side, which was pummeled. The far side was sprinkled, and it beat up Mercury and Venus and Mars, and it filled the solar system with debris. And as a result of that, you're also going to have a lot of biological material end up as hitchhikers going out into space with this debris.
Yep. So, again, the prediction was that we'd find powerful and less disputed evidence of biological matter scattered in the solar system.
Yes.
And if you Google biological matter in space, guess what?
You're probably going to find our list ranked number one, but you'll find a lot more. And, Fred, I think we could call this confirmed. Because, and we should mention some of these, there have been papers like in Nature Astronomy in 2020, just in September, Another paper at Archives submitted to Earth and Planetary Astrophysics, Harvard and other scientists, a NASA report from 2018, a PNAS, Proceedings of the National Academy of Science, 2019. We should give details on these. Another NASA report in 2019, another NASA and Advancing Earth and Space Science report in 2019. And Fred, all these have added to the already significant evidence that there is biological material in the solar system. So let's describe a few of these, what has been found and published sufficiently enough that we are claiming our prediction confirmed.
Well, Bob, just a month ago in September 2020, Nature Astronomy mentions phosphine gas in Venus's atmosphere at 20 parts per billion, and it has no known abiotic production. But on Earth, this arises from biological life.
Yeah, so phosphine gas, and what the authors did, it was really great, Fred. They made this robust effort to find a chemical pathway to produce phosphine gas. Like chemical reactions, there's often a number of ways to end up with the same results. Well, not for phosphine gas.
Yeah.
So far, there is no conceivable way to produce this other than as a result of biological life. And on Earth, we have a lot of that. And now they find phosphine gas on Venus in the atmosphere at a significant enough concentration that they could quantify it. 20 parts per billion. That's pretty cool.
That is.
That's evidence.
So, Bob, this next one is in 2020, published to the archives, submitted to Earth and Planetary Astrophysics.
Yep.
Harvard and other scientists have found in meteorite Asphur 086 a polymer including the amino acid glycine, which they believe is most likely a protein.
Yes. Yeah. So that's fun. And guess what? If we find yet another protein in a meteorite, that's more evidence of biological material in space. Back in 2018, NASA reported compounds that could have come from life include large organic molecules on the surface of Mars. Now, when they say organic, Fred, that term, it doesn't mean it comes from Whole Foods.
Yeah. Wait. It comes from Sprouts.
No, no, they're neither.
Okay.
Right? When we hear organic, we think of organic food.
Yep.
We think of a biological source. The term organic in chemistry, like OLED, we know LED lights, and now they have OLED lights, organic LEDs.
Yep.
It doesn't mean they're grown on a farm. It's a artifact of the history of chemistry where certain carbon compounds are called organic, whether or not they come from biology. But when you have organic chemistry, typically the most likely source is it comes from biology. Well, that's the case here. NASA reports large organic molecules on the surface of Mars, and this watery lake, an extinct lake, that once filled Mars' Gale crater contained complex organic molecules. Sulfur may have helped protect the organics. Not iron. Yeah. Remember the Iron Maiden with dinosaur soft tissue? They said it would be iron. Here they say maybe it's sulfur. It's just whatever, right?
Yeah.
Because we're young Earth creationists. We understand that these things are still there.
We don't need the rescue devices.
Yeah, we don't need them being preserved for millions of years because they're young.
And speaking of organic, Bob, you know, one of the most simplest organic molecules there is methane, and they found that in Mars' atmosphere.
Mm.
Organic, once again.
Yeah, and they think it's puzzling because it would survive only a few hundred years as a gas in the atmosphere of Mars. And they say, like NASA scientist Chris Webster, they say it really shouldn't be there. This is so much fun, Fred, because so much in our solar system, they say over and over and over, it really shouldn't
be there. It shouldn't be there.
But there it is. And then we have, I know we're jumping around, but in 2019, in PNAS, Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, analysis of carbonaceous chondrites. If anybody wants to learn The final word on chondrites, meteorites, you got to go to Walt Brown's book on our website, hpt.rsr.org. Just that's it. Hydroplate theory.
Yeah, the whole book is there.
hpt.rsr.org and look up chondrites. And so PNAS reports in 2019 organic mineral interactions during aqueous alteration, talking about water. And remember, organic doesn't always mean biological, but it often does. And that's added to the list of evidence.
So speaking of PNAS, both PNAS and NASA in 2019, they documented the first detection of sugars in three different meteorites.
I'll have Splenda, please. Yeah. Two Splenda. Yeah. These are sugars, Fred?
Yes. Chemical sugars.
In three coffee shops? Where did they find these sugars?
Meteorite called Starbucks and Caribou.
In three meteorites. And the sugars that they found include ribose, which historically is described as made in the cells, mm-hmm. you know, as in the R in RNA. Ribose and the other bioessential sugars, arabinose, xylose, and lysose. So these are essential in biology. And 15 years earlier, NASA incorrectly claimed regarding abiogenesis, and what an article we have on that in a show, when NASA scientists responded to us to the question we put to her. Just a fabulous show. rsr.org/abiogenesis. NASA claimed regarding abiogenesis that the imagined idea that ribose binding to borax was mm-hmm. a key step that has taken us closer to revealing the origin of life on Earth. Well, interestingly, when they actually find ribose, guess what? No borate, no borax. Yeah. So they try to imagine pathways that could lead to a biogenesis, but whenever there's evidence in the actual laboratory work, it always fails. What they prove over and over again is life can only arise if intelligence is directing the chemistry.
Yep.
And you need more than chemistry.
And it doesn't do very well in water. Even though they love water, that was part of your question.
Yeah, water tears apart the very compounds they need for life to arise. Okay, final publication, Fred, in our list.
Yeah, the journal Advancing Earth and Space Science in 2019, they said they found a mind-boggling, in their words, 30% higher than expected oxygen concentration in spring and summer. Spring and summer where?
Spring and summer. This is on Mars.
Mars.
So it's cyclical. If you have 30% more oxygen in spring and summer than you do in winter and fall on Mars's winter, then what that suggests, and they're detecting 21 parts per billion of methane, what that suggests is that microbial life could be on the surface of Mars. Mm-hmm. And of course, these folks, as far as they could see it, they would say, oh, look at that. Life came from Mars to Earth.
Yeah.
Mars is this bone dry desert, and Earth is brimming with water and life.
But somehow Mars seeded Earth.
Yeah. Wow. Instead of realizing that the life went from Earth to Mars, they say, oh, it must have started on Mars, when the Earth is the planet that is so hospitable to life. Fred, we are out of time.
Oh, wait, Bob, right before we end, we got to make another prediction.
Okay.
There's this spacecraft that's taken a measurement
off
of
an asteroid NASA sends up.
Yep.
And the results, it was a touch and go, Fred. They basically just kissed this asteroid.
Yeah, it was 6 seconds, and out of the six, they got about 5 seconds worth of samples, which is an eternity, like in my world of software.
Of software engineering. Yeah. That's a good point. But they're 200 miles away. Imagine going 200 million miles for a 5-second visit.
Yeah. Oh, and Bob, it looked like there was this little wooden sign on the asteroid. It was kind of blurry.
The photos?
When you kind of zoom up on it.
A wooden sign?
Yeah.
Oh, one of the Walt Brown was here.
There you go.
Signs.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Walt Brown was here.
Walt Brown was
because
here.
Because of
what do you
Walt
want,
Brown's man? Confirmed predictions based on the global flood and the fountains of the Great Deep, the hydroplate theory of what comprises meteorites and comets and asteroids and TNOs and their trajectories, their lifespans. It's brilliant the way we could explain why the moon got beat up.
Yep.
With God creating it just 7,000 years ago or so, why is it beat up and why is the near side pummeled whereas the far side is sprinkled?
Yeah. So go to rsr.org/store and get the hydroplate video if you want more details on this. It really documents it really well.
Our video, Global Flood and Hydroplate Theory. So prediction for 2023, just 3 years from now, is that when they really analyze this little kiss with an asteroid.
Yeah, that's when the space
they
the
bring
spacecraft
back
gets back to Earth,
the
2023, around September.
They're going to say, well, this is really shocking because what they're going to find is going to be similar to minerals like olivine and others right here on Earth because this space debris, it's from the sin of mankind and God's judgment of the Earth in the global flood.
Yeah, and that one will make a crossover on two lists.
Yes.
Biological material.
Oh, it could. It could conceivably.
Shocked scientists.
Shocked. Our list of shocked evolutionists.
That's my prediction. I add that to the predictions. Okay. That one's going to make two list shows.
Okay, that's a good one, too. All right, thank you, Fred Williams, for Real Science Radio. This is Bob Enyart. May God bless you.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real. That's what I'm talking about.